You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rockin' Radio's football podcast. I'm Nate Edwards, that's Nathan Hurst. This is Before the Box Score, your host, Black and Gold Game Edition. Spring football's done. Next thing on the plate is, what, Spring Portal, April 15th and May 1st. So we've got some time before then, but this is why Drink does what he does. The spring game is done, he's evaluated his team, and now they just sit back and tamper. I'm sorry. Recruit the portal. That's what he does. We'll talk a little bit about what we saw, what we didn't see, questions that we still have and things that we liked. But Nathan Hurst, how are you doing tonight?
Doing all right. I'm slowly recovering my voice from a nasty bug that the Hurst household encountered this past weekend. So feeling much better than my voice sounds, so I'll apologize for that ahead of time, but we're fine through it. It's my flu game, if you will.
I remember in my early podcasting days, I once did a show while still high on pain meds from a surgery. And I don't know why I decided to do that, but I did. And it was a terrible show. very funny to listen to, but not good content, or maybe the best content. It depends on how you view that, but flu game is good. Also, from one parent to another, kids are gross. So wash your hands. Always wash your hands.
I got mine because my three-year-old threw up on me five or six times in a row about
beautiful.
All Wednesday night. So, you
beautiful.
Know. Yeah, it happens.
Hold that over him for the rest of his life. That's what I plan to do with mine anyway.
Mercilessly.
Anyway. Speaking of throwing up, three-year-olds throwing up on you, let's talk Missouri football. The black and gold game is over. And as predicted, we learned nothing. But that's by design, right? They're not going to show the public anything. In fact, they're so committed to not showing the public anything that they did a draft of the team. And so starters were all mixed up with backups and walk-ons. There wasn't a unit on the field that was playing with the guys that they're going to play with. It was just out there having fun. And then to add on top of all these shenanigans, they played at Thud Tempo, which beyond being a tremendous album name, it really just means that, you know, they blow the play dead before you get hit, which all about. But the questions that I had, some of the questions we had, Nathan Hurst, offensive line, defensive line, running backs, Well, you're not going to figure out anything in the public about that because they're not really going to hit. So what would be a big takeaway from watching the black and gold game on your TV?
That it's good to see the black and gold on the football field running around. That's the main thing. So I did attend in person, at least for the first half. Lasted as long as a five-year-old decided to last, but for that made the first half one. One thing that I did notice in person is we've got some big dudes on the lines. And yeah, we always have pretty big dudes, but a couple of the newcomers that we had coming in, you can read on the page that Chris McClellan is 6'3", 320 pounds, and you can kind of know in your head that's a big guy. But then you see him on the field next to other big guys and go, no, this is a really big guy. The poor man's shirt didn't even fit on his body. So I think that's a sign that you're a pretty big dude.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while we know that, you know, we're hoping he fills a production hole that we have in the defensive line, that's still to be determined. But I know he's going to fit the size hole that we have up right up the middle, because that is a really big dude. And Sterling Webb is a very wide dude. I was surprised in person to see how wide, not as tall as McClellan is, but very wide, can fill a gap pretty well as well. So we have some big dudes. That's by far the most, I could actually see with my eyes and know that means.
Yeah.
For sure. One thing I found was interesting, speaking of big dudes, one dude that was really big that surprised me was Kai Montgomery.
Mm.
He came in as an edge. We never really saw him play on the field to play an edge. And because he's been hurt for the last 3 years off and on pretty much. And mm-hmm. he shows up here at the black and gold game, and he is a defensive tackle up next to Chris McClellan, and not just a tackle, but a really big defensive tackle, not as big as McClellan, but I think they have him listed at 287, and there's no way he's that small. He's bigger than that, which means he's put on at least 50 pounds from when they brought him in out of high school. So good for you, Kai. Hopefully you found a spot that you can find the field on. But yeah, so we have a lot of new faces in the middle of the defense, a lot of big faces. We'll see, it's kind of be determined how good they are, but at least they're big.
This is the heaviest defensive line in the Eli Drinkwitz era. Now part of that is because they fielded guys like Jaden Jernigan, who, is kind of like an Aaron Donald type, kind of lighter, quicker. I know he was listed at 279. He said he'd played at like 280, 285, 289, somewhere in there. But still, given that you play in the SEC in 2024, that's considered light, which is crazy. But, inflation hits everything, baby, including the size of college football players. And, even Rallis George, 6'1", 6 foot, really. I stood next to him. I'm not even sure he was 6 foot even. And like big, heavy dude, big, strong dude, but like kind of short and squat. And so, yeah, when you went up against, kind of your FCS teams like in South Dakota or, your G5 teams in Middle Tennessee, your defensive line was, good size, didn't really dwarf the competition like you would expect them to. This defensive line is going to do that because Chris McClellan is made out of like, he's 50% ass at this point, I think. And it's all motor, baby, all motor. And yeah, Sterling Webb also very big. And of course, Christian Williams, he was one of the few defensive tackles that's over 300. Now you add Kai Montgomery to that mix. It's big dudes. That's what you want. Like you said, eating space and eating up snaps too. So they look the part, which is always a nice, doesn't get you anything, but it looks cool coming off the bus. Just watching it kind of from a distance, I really wanted to see the running backs do stuff. And this was basically just a 7-on-7, which is fine. But I thought it was interesting how Marcus Carroll, who was the transfer from Georgia State, almost looks like Cody Schrader, like in how he runs and how he moves. He's got his little arms pumping, like kind of the way that he hits the hole and moves in the open. Like he looks like a Cody Schrader clone, which we all want another Cody Schrader. That's fine. But it seemed like Nate Knoll's going to be your number one guy. Obviously things can change as we go through the summer, as we get into the fall, and both will probably have their number called as we go through this, but just, initial thoughts on the running back replacing Cody Schrader. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was hard to see anything, as you mentioned. Any time they couldn't run play, I mean, they did call a few running plays, but the first time you get hit, the play's dead, and so that's going to happen at the line of scrimmage no matter what. Poor Gold team tried to run it in from the 1 yard line and did successfully run in for a touchdown, and only to have Drinkwitz call it back on him. The refs were going to give it to him and everything, but he refused. So he's kind of a hater of fun. It was not a conducive layout and format to see anything about the running backs. I mean, even because they just ran so little. We did see Noel a couple times on the edge, you know, and he'd kind of get the edge and get 3 or 4 yards if they really tried to tackle him. How many yards would he have gotten? I don't know. Would he have broken a tackle and kept going? I don't know. And they both, I mean, yeah, they just got so few carries, and they were on opposite teams with mixed match offensive lines where you had 2 starters and 3 third stringers. And it's just really impossible to tell. I was hoping that was one of the things I was very interested to see, just how they would rotate those guys in, and it ended up being completely moot.
Yeah. Logan Reichert, also a big dude. You can tell, you know, the 66, you know, he's just, that's a mound of flesh, just moving dudes. It was incredible. Yeah. You know, the other fun thing was just the trick plays. I think we had 2 wide receiver passes. That's fun. Apparently they were going to call a third, and Kirby Moore said, no, we're good. Which it doesn't mean anything in the spring. You put it out there to get in people's heads, but like, it's fun. And you know, you got to celebrate because, you know, you threw a touchdown pass and you're a wide receiver. So that was kind of cool. And you know, the one guy who did catch a touchdown pass was Josh Manning, which, you know, you think about, you get your entire receiving core back, and context about how this black and gold game was set up, all that aside, the one receiver to catch a touchdown pass, local blue chipper Josh Manning, who's mostly a special teamer and a guy who just kind of motioned across the line when he saw he was on the field. So, hey, you know what? I guess it's great that the young guys can score and make big plays, because we already know what we got, and that's all leaving next year. So, you know, it was good to see the youth get out there and make some plays.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, there are 2 receivers that popped out, and neither of those guys are going to be on the, you know, they might barely crack the 2D, but Josh Manning had a great game, has size, you know, has in length, and go up and went up and grabbed that jump ball for the touchdown. Daniel Bled looked really good too. I think he actually ended up being the offensive player of the game that the coaching staff determined. I mean, he was catching stuff on drag routes, on, you know, crossers, he was all over the place. I think it helped that he and Manning both had Cook throwing to him.
Makes a difference.
The guys higher up on the depth chart, you know, didn't have that luxury and didn't play as many snaps as those 2 guys did. But they both look good. I mean, that means that if they both can look that good in the fall, that means you have 6 to 7 wide receivers that I think legitimately play on just about any SEC team. Maybe not start, but would get reps. And if you're running 7 deep at the wide receiver position in the SEC, I think you're in pretty good. Because knock on wood, injuries can happen to anybody at any time, and so even more than one injury can happen. So if you've got, you know, backups and backups for your backups that are going to come in and be able to be productive, that's huge. That's huge for sure, especially for an offense like the one that we want to run. That's open. Once you put the ball all over the field, you need guys that can run routes that fill all the holes at all the levels of the field to make it work. And so if you just have a bunch of little short slot guys, a bunch of Mookie Coopers, that's not going to work. But if you have a bunch of big guys that can only run down the field, that's not going to work either. So having these guys a bunch of diverse wide receivers can only be a good
thing. And like last year was really the first time we saw what I would call a diverse receiving core. Because, you know, to your point, it was a bunch of slot guys. Basically, since Drinkwitz got here, Barrett Bannister, Mookie Cooper, you know, like, there wasn't any standout guys. Like, you had a Towski Dove, who was mostly a blocker. You had a Kiki Chisholm, who was big, just couldn't get targets. Like, they wanted a guy who could go deep. They wanted a guy who could take the top off with some speed. And they wanted possession guys in the slot to feast. But, like, it was just all slot guys. That's all they could get. And it took a while to get there, but you know, they hired Jacob Peeler as a wide receivers coach. And really not only receiving recruiting, but recruiting took off. That's kind of Peeler's thing. So it is nice that, you know, we finally had a diverse weapon set in the receiving core. And now you have backups to that, because Theo Weiss was basically your lone, you know, high point jump ball dude last year. His backup was Marquise Johnson. So like, that's not the same skill set, but that he played behind Johnson. And then you had, you know, Mekhi Miller behind Luther Burden, and Daniel Blood played back there too. And, you know, Mookie Cooper is around, but Josh Manning was, you know, he sometimes got worked and sometimes didn't. But Josh Manning is going to be your Theo replacement. And James Madison and Courtney Crutchfield, whenever they get on campus, similar style, you know, kind of big flanker types who are going to try and outjump their corners. And then you just got a bunch of other slot guys that can fill in too. So it's nice. And you want those younger guys to show that they can do stuff, even if it's a throwaway spring game where stuff doesn't matter. So that was very good to see.
Yeah, one guy you barely touched on there, Marquise Johnson. Another guy that looks – he's put on a little bit of weight, I think. He's hit the weight room a little bit. I mean, he's never going to be a really big guy. But he's put on a little muscle, it looked like, to see him in person for the first time in 4 months. And he was running the full route tree at the spring game, something that he did not do last year, maybe because he didn't need to, maybe because he didn't have full grasp of the playbook yet. I don't know. But, you know, he had the one skill set last year, which is run really fast, really far down the field, and then catch the ball when it's thrown to you. And he did that really well. But if he can incorporate, you know, some of the other routes, the stops, the digs, the crossers, that's going to make, when he lines up on the outside or in the slot or wherever, it's going to make the defender who's across from him have to think a little bit more about what this guy is going to do. That makes that deep ball that much more effective. Because if he can get a little stutter, the guy would have to honor that and worry about guarding it, or that's an easy 10-yard pass. If he can run a bunch more different routes, then that's going to make him that much more dangerous.
No. I mean, you can go very far in college by just running an effective 9 route. Ask Emmanuel Hall. but if you can turn that into, you know, something different, you know, Jerry Rice, you know, he was maybe not the fastest, the biggest, the strongest, but like he ran routes really well. People always said, I mean, that dude hides what he's going to do. Probably the best of any receiver, certainly during his era, maybe of all time. That's debatable and whatever. That's not the show. But even, you know, Randy Moss, he was more physical than most of the corners around him, but he also hid what he was going to do really, really well. So you did not know if he was going to, you know, light your socks on fire as he went right past you, or then immediately stop, pivot, and take a, you know, 10, 15 yard, you know, hitch route and then start running past you. So like building that skill set, you know, if you want to be good in college, run the 9 and just run it forever. If you want to be good in the NFL, to your point, be able to mix it up, do a lot of different things. And Marquise Johnson certainly has the speed. Now let's develop everything else, and that's pretty cool. Other than that, you know, that was kind of the offensive side. On defense, again, benefit of the thud tempo, because all they had to do is get a hand on him, and they were basically done. Interceptions. I know that we didn't have a full complement of quarterbacks. There's really only one guy we trust right now. But newcomers, Flag and Pride, got some interceptions and some pretty impressive ones. And of course you look at the score of the black and gold game, you know, 10-9, definitely the defense is ahead of the offense, which is typical of college football, especially at this time. But it was nice to see interceptions. Even though our defense was really good last year, they weren't the best at turning them over, especially with picks. And it was refreshing to see that. I'll just leave that there.
Yeah, and the one that Pride made was happened right in front of me from where I was sitting in the stands. That was a great athletic, very athletic play that he made. Is that a throw that Cook makes in a real game? Probably not. I mean, it's a practice game. Those are kind of the kind of throws you want an entrenched starter to make and just test and see what can I do? You know, how far can I throw this? Can I fit this in this window? This is the time to experiment for a guy like that right now, where he's not worried about losing his job to someone else. He can just play around with it and see. Also, he was throwing that wind was brutal and it was very strong, and he was throwing right into it. So on a different day, it's never that windy in the fall at Fro. So on a different day, that ball probably goes about three more yards. And I think it was a Johnson that receiver was on that play. He catches it, and it might, you know, might even be a touchdown at that point. So I'm not concerned at all. But from the pick from Cook's point, it was just more just a really awesome play by Pride.
Yeah. You want to see that because you're losing two NFL corners. Not the easiest thing to replace, even for the bluest of blue bloods. You never know. So Pride came back to his home state. Well, you know, the local school is what we'll call it. But, you know, that's kind of what he was looking for. He was underutilized at Clemson, which is, you know, it's a smart move to go there. They've won national titles. They put out great receivers and corners, maybe not recently, but the pedigree's there. And he just couldn't, you know, they stopped trusting him. And now he's here and he's filling in a spot that we needed right across from Dre Norwood. So, you know, I'm not going to pencil in and say, hey, no longer need to worry about corners and then just file that away. But it's nice to see. It's nice to see. And it sounds like kind of he's been making those types of plays throughout the spring, not just in the black and gold game. So, God, man, I don't even know what we're going to do with a corner who can intercept the ball. Like, I've seen him, pick, you know, swat him away for the past 3 years, but picks would be nice. But, yeah, I mean, the secondary seemed comfortable. You know, Dalen Carnell, Joseph Charleston seemed to be kind of the vocal leaders in that group, even if it is spring. How do you feel about the secondary, even though we just kind of saw a crummy 7-on-7 for a couple of hours?
It was really hard. It was another thing that's kind of hard to judge on the whole. I mean, half of them are playing on one team and they're going against Brett Brown, who, God bless him, actually looked better than I expected him to look. He made a couple nice throws on the run, but that's not the type of competition that you're going to be facing most of the year. And they're just not, they weren't playing in any kind of cohesive group where you know that Charleston and whoever wins the other free safety or the other safety spot, and then the two corners are able to communicate. You know, it's just a hodgepodge of guys that are coming in and out. So very hard to judge. No one got burned. Even the touchdown to Josh Manning was a contested play that Manning went up and brought down. Would that have been a different story if Cook had Weiss and Burden throw to? Hard to say. Maybe not. So it's just really hard to say. But yeah, no, there were no massive coverage busts where someone was just running wide open down the field. So I think in this kind of format, that's about all you can hope for.
Yeah. And you know what? No one got hurt. Which, you know, if you're going to get hurt, spring is fine. Not the best, but it's fine. But that's why you play the thud tempo. That's why you play it not to bring the guy down. No one got rolled up on. No one tripped over their own feet. No one got, you know, shook up or anything like that. So mission accomplished there. So, you know, it's done, right? The spring practices are done. The players now go back to pretending to be students for the rest of the semester, and they'll get back to it in the summer. But, you know, right now, as teams are going through spring practice, rosters are going to be shook out. Depth charts are going to be shook out. People are going to realize kind of where they stand, at least in the spring. So once that portal opens back up in April, we got a brand new crop of guys that you can pick from. You know, heading into this, Hurst, I don't feel like Mizzou's in a gotta get something situation, especially now that we have our quarterback and Drew Pine, or Drew Poon, as it still is tagged in my phone. I don't know why that won't fit, but whatever. So now that we got our quarterback, there's really not a pressing need. But just based off of camp reports and what you saw, is there any position where you're like, you know what, it'd be nice to have another transfer addition here?
Yeah, and I think there's two spots that would be really nice. First one would be linebacker, just because of how I'm not that I'm worried about these guys we have that are on the top line starter wise, but once you get below Hicks and below Newsom, below Flag, those three guys, there's a whole lot of unknown under there. Yeah. Now, Brayshon Littlejohn did play quite a bit on Saturday, looked like he was doing okay. That was like the format where you see the least out of linebackers because they don't really have to do anything. But you know, so if the coaches feel comfortable that Littlejohn is ready to see the field and get some snaps, or take over, God forbid, if someone goes down, then maybe we don't. But that's a spot that I think we could use. And if not a starter, some depth, someone that has that has seen the field, you're not freaking out and keeping up at night if you know that he's going to have to play, 50 snaps on Saturday because he's just not going to get blown off the ball or toasted one way or the other. So that'd be number one for me. The other one would be defensive tackle, just because you're losing so much production there. Yeah. You can always find snaps for defensive tackle, meaning you can always rotate your guys in. If you have if you have five guys that are worth getting on the field, you can easily get five guys on the field and get enough playing time so they all feel like they're contributing and they're on the field. But with losing the three guys that we lost, all of that production, yeah, we brought in a couple guys that are gonna play for sure. But you can always use more just depth, just building the depth on the offensive or on the defensive line. And I mean, as a Freudian slip, offensive line too. You'll never turn away an offensive line transfer who you think can play. Turn one away. So if one comes out of the woodwork, like, ooh, I'll take you. Take as many, because you can never have too many offensive linemen or defensive. I mean, it's just the trenches. You have to have them on there if you want to, because we are not going to be, God forbid, speaking of the universe, we are not going to be as healthy next year as we were last year on the trenches. It's just, there's no way. So at any chance that you can snag a backup center, a swing tackle that could go play on either side if someone turns an ankle, just some extra piece that maybe is flexible that could play out, you know, a couple different positions, that would be pretty key.
Yeah. To your point, I mean, you know, I'm writing these position postmortems at the end of each season, and I always go back and read like what I wrote about, you know, at this time last year. And when I did the offensive line one, you know, in 2022, Missouri played five different offensive linemen. Or let me rephrase. They played 10 different offensive linemen who had over 100 snaps. Let me phrase it that way. Okay. Now, the snaps taken by the offensive line in 2022 were almost the exact same total as they took in 2023, except they only played six. And really, the sixth was Marcellus Johnson, who had like 55, 58 snaps on the year. So yeah, got very lucky. And
those snaps were like when as a sixth offensive lineman. Yep. I mean, he wasn't replacing somebody.
Like it was like spelling one of the tackles or coming in on a heavy package. You know, it's just boy, we just played five dudes. And you want to know one of the reasons why the offense got better? You played five dudes instead of 10. That's just kind of part of it. So yeah, there's no way that's going to happen again. And yeah, we say it, I think we said it at every show, but like it's so rare that you get an offensive lineman of starting caliber just going into the portal. Because like it's hard enough to get those jobs at the team you're already at, let alone trying to go and do it somewhere else. More often than not, the ones that are starting caliber are coming up from the FCS or like maybe a G5 or, you know, some like trying to move up a level. And then there comes the unknown of, well, they did it there. Can they do it here? So it's never feels good. So again, getting Caden Green was a coup. That's one of the biggest wins that you could possibly get in this portal season that started in winter anyway.
He's a unicorn, really a unicorn beyond a coup. Don't see guys starting at a blue blood college football program and have a lockdown starting spot. You don't see those guys going to the portal.
Just don't. They had it figured out, or everyone thought he had it figured out, and there he is. So yeah, you always get an offensive lineman. As far as the linebackers, that is an interesting point. You know, so often I kind of discount our linebackers, or at least the past couple of years I have, because of the system that they get deployed in. Like, well, you're only playing two. But we saw last year, you know, one of them can go down, and then what? And even last year, two can go down as Tyron Hopper missed the last couple of games of the year. And it's like, well, crap, what do we have? And, you know, we got lucky that Tristan Newsome, JUCO transfer, was ready to go. And, oh, by the way, one of the most disruptive linebackers we had on our roster the entire time. What? So, I mean, that worked out really well. But there's so often I'm like, you know, we can wait on linebacker. We can wait for the young guys to step up. And it's like, well, you kind of need four ready to go. I was really hoping to see more of Brian Huff. He of one of the two linebacking prospects has come in that was very well regarded from the recruiting services. I don't recall seeing him do anything.
I remember seeing him make one or two plays. I mean, it was on, but you know, they're filling a gap and touching a guy and then the play is over. Yeah. So there's not much you're going to see at all. I did see him on the field, but it's not like he was sacking the quarterback or picking off passes, which is only the only time you're actually going to notice anybody.
Yeah, and you're not sending him on a blitz, but like I just wanted to see how he moved. I don't recall seeing, like, remembering him do anything substantial, which is not a knock on him. But like Nick Rodriguez is the second He's a blue chipper. He's coming in. And, you know, he hits campus this fall, August, whatever. So I was like, can you count on him to, like, not only be 18, 19 years old and, you know, a month with the book and then, oh, by the way, jump in there and be the fourth guy? I don't know.
You don't see true freshmen.
You don't
play a line in the linebacker spot. There are some spots that they can come in and make a difference. Wide receiver is one of them. And, you know, sometimes maybe secondary safety, perhaps, if there's not a lot of, you know, playbook to know, to say be deeper than the deepest man kind of thing. But linebackers got so much to learn beyond the physical aspects of the game that it's very, very difficult for those guys.
Yeah, it really is. Just scraping blocks, being physical, like it that's tough to do if you're not built like a 20-21 year old. So it's rare. I mean, you get a Harold Perkins, who's a 5-star phenom, and they just unleashed him like a torpedo. And then stop doing that, but that's a different story. But like that's really the one way that you can get a freshman linebacker on there, is just do the one thing, kind of like Marvin Burks and Philip Roche last year. Just blitz, baby. If they were the safeties on the field, they weren't in covers. They were just going at the line and like, all right, here we go. So it's tough. It's tough to do that. So I'm not banking on either Huff or Rodriguez to just step in and be the third or fourth guy. So you got three. Is Will Norris a career special teamer step up? Like, you know, Brayshon Littlejohn, like you talked about in his second year, can he stand up? I don't know. And I don't think we're going to know until the season. So I would agree. It'd be nice to have a proven linebacker, but we'll see what's out there. Defensive line, too. How did you feel about the defensive ends? And, like, I don't know which one was playing Joker because it was really hard to tell, but based off of what you saw, Zion Young, you know, the Joe Moore, Johnny Walker, like, how did you feel about our edge performance?
You know, once again, really hard to say in this kind of thing. Darius Smith looked good. He had a couple flash plays rushing the passer. One where he got a sack. And really, if it was live action, he didn't want to get kicked off the team by strafing Cook's arm while he was throwing. It would have been a strip sack and might probably taken the other way. That was early on in the game. Then he had another pressure that could have easily been turned into a sack if he was able to actually dive and make a tackle as well. So I thought he's the one that popped out of all those guys. But as far as, you know, looking for the Joker position, what I was looking for, just based on what we had been told that this position would be, is whoever was the end on the boundary side, so the closest to the sideline. Typically when the ball's lined up on the hash marks closest to the sideline, and that really turned out to be, and they really truly were rotating based on where the ball was. So Darius Smith and Johnny Walker would kind of rotated in on that position, and then whoever I can't remember who they had played on the other end for the gold team, but it was Smith and Walker, depending on who was on the field for the gold team, were playing that. I'm going to horribly mispronounce his name, but he's a redshirt freshman, Serigne Tunkura.
Serene Tunkura?
I apologize, buddy. Yeah. I'll learn your name. That's a tough one. He was for the black team. He really was the guy on the black team, which was I was interesting that he played a lot of. And that might have just been the way that the draw fell. The guy lining up closest to the sideline, they were. I found it was interesting because they were alternating pretty regularly between the two. You stand up, you know, kind of 2-point stance where you're on your feet, and then getting down, hand in the dirt. It was kind of 50-50 far as, and that I'm sure it probably depended on the down, the distance, the defensive call. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting because I myself, knowing very little, could tell a difference or could tell what caused them to do that. But I think that is interesting. Because that didn't change necessarily. They could be down on a 3-point stance, but still hop up and not rush the. You know, they're not going to be going. They could be, you know, playing the edge or dropping back and pass, or they could be on a 2-point stance and be going to rush the passer too. So it really kind of is a change up and a mix up to, you know, maybe getting the tackle's head a little bit to decide who he's supposed to be blocking in that play.
No.
It looked like Walker and Smith, which is kind of what we heard out of practice as far as those two guys. Probably going to be the lead role on that position. Joe Moore played a lot for the black team. He was cut more on the field side, just kind of as a passer, rushing the passer. But Zion Young, he was kind of one of those guys. I just didn't really notice him on the field. He was out there. I didn't notice that he, you know, did anything one way or another.
Yeah. Neil.
Yeah, could we, you know, would we take a really good defensive end? Absolutely. Is it someone that we need to devote a ton of, you know, NIL capital and recruiting time to try and bring in another one? Probably not. I think there are other holes that could be filled, you know, use those resources in different ways. But you're not going to turn down a stud defensive end if you got one, especially with Williams and Winery coming in as well. I mean, we've got guys that are going to find the field.
There's just, it's a numbers thing. You're going to throw numbers at it. You brought in two edge rushers. You have three coming back with playing experience. And then you have like five others between Winery, Elias Williams, you know, Ja'Kai Lane, Sareem Tunkara. There's enough there that one can stand out. One can come up and be part of a four-man rotation. You just like they did, you know, in 22, and they did, you know, for the defensive line as a whole, and then, you know, 23 for the edge, you just throw numbers at it, see what happens. You throw enough power five caliber guys at a problem, they're gonna fix it. So it's, yeah, I'm not worried about that yet. I saw a couple people kind of go, well, you know, nothing really stood out, which I think is kind of just part of the design, but also they've addressed it. And I'm with you. I don't think there needs to be a further investment in the edge unless they see something or know something that we don't know. So, yeah, it was interesting. It's tough to learn anything. It's cool to see Jeremy Maclin get interviewed. I know you were at the game. I don't know if you saw him walking around. No. No. But, he, you know, he's head coach at Kirkwood High School, his alma mater. So, obviously, he's plugged in. He knows a lot about what's happening here. I'm sure he's vocal about a lot of Mizzou stuff with his kids, or I hope he is. Or, you know, I hope he's pushing them in the right direction. How about that? But it's nice to have a Mizzou guy at a Missouri school. You know, there's a lot of coaches who can grow pretty decent coaching trees from their players. And Gary Pinkel, I think, is one that's got several former players who are standout coaches, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, I mean, really, that's it. It's spring, and Missouri went first. So it's tough to kind of tell, you know, how to really gauge the landscape until everything is done and that portal opens. But, you know, we did it. We got through another spring black and gold game. Team's intact, looks good, and now we wait until the portal, and then we wait until fall camp. Ugh. So what are you going to do this summer? How do you pass the time between college football seasons?
Well, we talked about the video game already. That's coming out in July, so now it's really, you've cut that down to from March till July. So between there, I've got my I have gotten in recent years really into really trash reality TV shows in the summer. So mark me up for Big Brother every summer. I tend to get into that every June or July whenever they start, and that kind of gets me at least until football season. But that's about it.
All right, yeah.
Chasing Young Children and Big Brother, and then when I get the video game, you know, neglecting my family for entirely too long and playing that.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. I will also be chasing small children around the zoo and the aquarium and various parks, and that's cool by me. Because, yeah, during Saturdays during the fall, Dad disappears and starts yelling at his TV. So, you know, it's quality family time. We're going to do that. I start getting back into documentaries personally. It can be about anything. I'll always watch a good documentary. I have started getting into these. I don't know if you saw these, but like Netflix has these like drama documentaries where like they go over like a historical time period, like the last Russian czars, or you know, the siege of Constantinople. And they will do like, they'll have historians on to talk about like what was happening, what they were doing, but they have like these dramatic reenactments with like, you know, quality reenactors, like actual actors with actual production value. So like they tell a story like a movie, and then they intersplice it with like the actual historical facts and modern historians. And I'm just a freaking sucker for that stuff, man. Like I will watch that all the time. And especially since I don't watch it during the fall. So
History Channel with a budget is really what you're saying.
There you go. Yeah. Without the aliens, right? It's better. And you know, they dropped a first season of Alexander the Great. So I'm going to watch that. But yeah, that's That's kind of how I do it. Just watch kids and learn about history. So interesting am I. Please tell us what you do. Tell us how you pass the time. Maybe we can get some fresh ideas. But you know what? That's going to be the show for today. And it's a short one, but you can deal with it because spring is over and I'm excited to step away for a little bit. So it's going to be all good. But that's the show. Like I said, as always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. You can leave a comment or you can rate us because we want feedback from all you guys. You follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate Edwards, like it says right there. He's at First to First, like it says right there. And of course, you can follow the Rockin' Flagship at Rockin' Nation and our podcasting outlet at Rockin' Radio. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, M-I-Z.
Z-O-U.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Rock M Radio, a proud partner of Fans First Sports Network. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to see more just like it beamed directly into your personal device, just click the subscribe button below. And you can find this podcast through the Apple Podcast app or for iPhone or the Google Podcast app for Android or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. We are also available on Spotify. Just search for Rock M Radio. And if you like other sports, Fans First Sports Network is a podcast network that has coverage of all other teams, Major League Baseball, MLS, NFL, whatever you want to listen and read about. It is a great, great network full of really fantastic podcasts. So look them up and subscribe to any and all of those podcasts. Rock M Radio will be back with more episodes coming soon. Thanks.